All right, we are back with Indie Media on Air, and Luke and Starhawk are our special guests today, talking about the Biotech Convergence Conference in San Francisco, June 3rd to the 9th. So, Luke, can you continue with some of those examples that you were giving? They're just incredibly frightening, and I think people need to hear more about what's happening.
I mean, in terms of the patenting of genes and seeds, it's really a terrible situation. In the United States, a poll of laboratory directors in December 1999 found that nearly a quarter of those laboratory directors polled had already been written to by law firms representing biotech companies, ordering them to stop conducting research into things such as late-onset Alzheimer's disease or breast cancer, because these corporations now had patents on the genes central to those processes. Over a half of the laboratories polled had voluntarily given up research because they knew a patent had been awarded or a patent was pending. So if, you know, the future of medicine is, as the pharmaceutical industry suggests, inextricably linked to the further understandings in genes and the relationships between genes and disease disease processes and chemicals such as pharmaceuticals, well, we know who's going to be in control of access to that medicine, who's going to be setting the prices. And so that's, you know, what's taking place in terms of the patenting of human genes. And Myriad Genetics, for example, they have a patent on the BRCA1 and the BRCA2 genes, two of the genes associated with breast cancer, and have told healthcare facilities that they can't conduct breast cancer screening unless they want to pay thousands of dollars in royalties to Myriad Genetics for their corporate patents on a gene that's been developing in our bodies, you know, possibly since life first started forming in the oceans. And these corporations are wandering around the planet, essentially robbing us of the biological commons, the genetic resources of all life. You know, just as was it Livingston, you know, stood surveying the Victoria Falls what is I think now Zimbabwe, and probably he at the time he looked at the Victoria Falls, he was seeing the villages in the distance and the people working in the fields, and he said, "I am the first human being to set eye on the Victoria Falls," and named it the Victoria Falls. So too, these corporations are looking through the genes of this planet and calling themselves the inventors. It's an outrage. There are companies being awarded exclusive patent rights to the entire gene pool of the people of Tonga, for example. A biotech company called Autogen has a patent rights to the entire gene pool of the people of Tonga based on the unique genetic characteristics of the Tongan people. This corporation, Autogen, will set up a research facility next to Tonga's only hospital, ask people admitted to the hospital to give blood or hair samples, and those blood or hair samples then used by this corporation to develop pharmaceutical products. Corporations are being given rights for plants. There's a bush called the Jubilee from the Gabon in West Africa that produces a very sweet berry. Of course, the local peoples have known about that for a long time. The University of Wisconsin steal this berry, take it back to the United States, isolate the ingredient that gives it its sweetness, Brazian, and sell it as a patented product for millions on the lucrative sweetener market. These are the kinds of things that are going on in terms of the patenting of genes and biopiracy.
And it's important, I think, to make the point that we're in this mobilization, we're not anti-science. We're very much for science that's conducted for the public good. What we are is we're anti-corporate-driven, corporate-controlled, profit-motive-driven science, partly because we don't think that makes for the best science. You know, in some ways, it's like I'm a writer. If at some point some corporation had been able to patent the concept of the sentence so that every time I wanted to write something and I wrote a sentence, I had to pay them 5 cents, how much writing do you think would be getting done in the world right now? The corporations very much portray themselves and try to sell us on biotech by saying, you know, we're doing good for the world, you know, we're science, we're curing diseases and stuff. But as Luke just outlined, the very patenting, the very economic constraints that they put on science are actually undermining research.
Starhawk, can I touch on your vision, which you mentioned a little bit earlier? Can you give our listeners a vision of what a scientific community looks like? And Luke, feel free to jump in on this as well. When the corporate motive of ownership of resources that have existed long before these companies were formed is not an issue, and what kind of collaborative science is taking place in a world where people aren't throwing up walls to prevent others from using, exploring and studying these substances?
I think the great scientists throughout history have always been motivated by the sheer love of knowledge and by the hope of actually doing something that will benefit other human beings. And I think truly most of us are deeply motivated in life, not so much by how much profit we want to make, but by wanting to make a contribution to our community. So our vision of the world is one in which science is something that we say is a commons, something that should be publicly funded, and where the rewards come back into the public pot. It doesn't mean that scientists don't get rewarded for what they do, but you know, they get rewarded in ways that everyone would get rewarded for making a contribution to society. And it's a kind of science that would be driven by public good and public need, not by the hope of where corporations can make more profit. Because truly, when we are profit-driven, you know, that drives science and drives the direction of research in a way that is not necessarily serving the public good. You know, for example, you have the same corporations researching breast cancer that are producing the chemicals which are the likely causes of breast cancer. They're not going to be focusing their research on the environmental precursors of breast cancer. They're going to be focusing it on some drug that can make them more money. Whereas if we have a public vision of what science can be, then we might say, well, let's first look at how, what is it in our environment that's causing this disease? Again, if we get out of the war metaphor, how do we see the bad thing and shoot it, you know, and go back into the relational metaphor and say, you know, the disease is some sign of imbalance in our environment, in what we're eating, in how we're living. You know, let's look at all of those factors and see how they interrelate and see how we can create more health around us. We probably would find ways to prevent and possibly even cure cancer that are actually much less expensive than the drugs that we're using and much less toxic than the ways that we're going about it right now.
What you both are describing is just absolutely frightening in, you know, in terms of the direction that this has taken. I mean, anybody familiar with basic scientific principles and scientific method requires peer review in order to advance the science. And what you're describing is sort of an isolated, private model for doing science and then profiting off of it. And let me ask you this. Is it accurate to say that there's genes within my body that have been patented by these corporations?
It's exactly true to say that.
And you probably owe Monsanto royalties just for walking around.
It's funny and completely terrifying. I just want to...
Totally insane.
Yeah, it's completely...
That's one of the gifts of this issue. That's one of the gifts of the genetic engineering issue is people are like, no way.
Yeah.
No way. What you're talking about is science fiction. And I'm like, no, really, this company in San Diego has been engineering corn plants with human genes so that the corn plants contain a rare class of human antibodies that attack sperm. That's really happening. And people are just so shocked sometimes by how far things have gotten out of control. But the gift in that is that people say, okay, enough now.
Where are the lawsuits being brought against Monsanto and others? What's happening on the legal front with this?
Well, there's a big antitrust lawsuit that actually got introduced by the National Family Farmers Coalition. The small farmers in the United States are very clear that the biotech industry is using genetic engineering as a way to gain a stranglehold on global agricultural markets. There's just four companies that control 100% of the trade in genetically engineered seeds. These companies also control 60% of the global pesticide market and 23% of the commercial seed market globally. And so this lawsuit's been brought by the family farmers in the United States, and it hasn't really gotten anywhere yet. And then there was the case, as we mentioned before, with Monsanto,
and Percy Schmeiser, but unfortunately, there was a slight victory in it, Percy Schmeiser didn't actually have to pay Monsanto damages because Monsanto couldn't prove that he profited as a result of having Monsanto's genes on his land. But essentially, the right for Monsanto to uphold their patent was protected.
Yeah. Are there other companies? You know, we hear the word Monsanto over and over again. There must be other key players that our listeners should be aware of aside from Monsanto?
There are. I mean, one of the reasons that Monsanto gets referred to again and again is because we're actually winning against Monsanto by referring to their name so often, and their stock price has completely crashed, and they're in a pretty bad state with investors coming out saying, you know, it's a bad choice to put your money into Monsanto and so on. So we're kind of kicking it while it's down, so to speak. And but there's also Syngenta, we have Aventis, Syngenta, Monsanto. They're the big ones. Dow.
Yeah. Right. Great. For our listeners who are out there who are shocked to find out that Monsanto owns their genetic code, we're going to open the phone lines up in a few minutes, and you're going to be able to talk about why your body is owned by a company you've never invested in or heard of. We'll be opening the phones up in about 5 or 7 minutes.
And is there something we can do creatively to take some direct action to protect our genes?
Well, there's a lot of things that people can do. And, you know, one of the hopeful things is that, as Luke said, we really are, I think, turning the tide on this issue. One of the things you can do is come on up to San Francisco June 3rd through the 9th for the Reclaim the Commons mobilization and take part in the teach-ins and the actions, learn more, and, you know, help us raise our voices around this issue. But for people who can't come up, you know, there's many other ways that people are taking action. This year in Mendocino County, they recently passed an initiative that bans the growing of GMO crops and animals in the county, and that was a major victory. Monsanto pumped $700,000 into that campaign, which amounts to something like $60 per voter in the county, and the initiative still won by a landslide. So that's a very hopeful sign, and many other counties now are putting forth initiatives. Of course, what they're doing now is trying to pass a law at the state level that would void all those county initiatives. So one thing people can also do is to contact your state representatives and say, hey, no, we don't want that law. You know, we want the ability and the right to make these decisions ourselves and to keep them in our hands.
Yeah, one of the things about this mobilization in terms of reclaiming the commons, and one of the things that the commons is defined as, is the public spaces, the political spaces that have taken so long for, you know, generations that have come before us to carve away from the ruling elites, that we have now some ways in which we can exercise our decision, our vote over the future of our world. And so this vote that's taking place through ballot initiatives, like the one that happened in Mendocino County, like the one that other people are going to try to do in the November ballot, is about way more than genetic engineering. It's about the response of people on the local level to a government and decision-making processes that are so far distant, that are making choices that are so far removed from what people feel in their hearts. And people need to protect the right for local communities to enact sort of local systems of democracy. And so if this right gets taken away by the state legislature, if people get told they don't have the right to decide on the future of the world that they're living in, they don't have a right to have a say in the fact that if the industry gets their way, in a decade we'll see the genetic engineering of all major food crops, fruits, vegetables, grains, trees in tree plantations, pigs, chickens, cows, sheep, microorganisms, fish in aquaculture production. If the state legislature says, no, people don't have a right to say, have any input into those decisions that are being made, it's going to be a sad day for all of us on lots of levels, not just in terms of genetic engineering.
So for our listeners out there, the phone number is 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735 or 985-KPFK. We are KPFK FM 90.7 Los Angeles and 98.7 in Santa Barbara County. You're listening to India on the Air with your host Chris Burnett and Stephen Starr here, and we're talking to Starhawk and Luke about what can only be described as a absolutely pressing, outrageously concerning situation that we are all confronted by, this San Francisco Biotech and G8 mobilization from June 3rd to 9th, which you can find out more about by staying tuned and checking in the Reclaim the Commons website, is going to be talking about just how we handle the ownership of life on this planet. And we have a bunch of callers on the line right now. Perhaps we'll jump in on a call. Why don't we take, I think I see Tim from La Crescenta. Tim on line two, I believe.
Yes, La Crescenta, and it's a word that doesn't exist. I love your programs. I learn a lot, but I do like to ask the hard questions. And I would like to know the name of the gene that Monsanto owns inside of me, how they got it, and what they plan on doing with it.
That's a good question.
Okay, well, it wasn't actually me that said that Monsanto has a gene in the human body. I can tell you the companies that do have genes on the human body. For example, a Massachusetts corporation called Athena Diagnostics has exclusive rights to certain tests in the diagnosis of late-onset Alzheimer's disease due to patent number 5,508,167. We have a company called Myriad Genetics, I referred to, has the patents on the BRCA1 and the BRCA2 genes, two of the genes associated with breast cancer. A U.S.-based company called Biocyte has a patent on all umbilical cord cells from fetuses and newborn babies, because these blood cells in the umbilical cord are an important source of stem cells, and stem cells are the progenitors of all cells in the blood. And they're used in various therapeutic treatments. That's why Biocyte have that patent, so they can demand royalties for anyone who uses any kind of diagnostic or medical procedure involving umbilical cord cells. A company called Systemix has a patent on all human bone marrow stem cells. And the patent not only includes the process used to isolate the stem cells, but it also covers the stem cells themselves, even though they haven't been engineered, manipulated, or altered in any way whatsoever. There's a company called Insight, based in California, has applied for patents, or by the time I wrote my book, which was 5 years ago, they had already filed for patents on 1.2 million DNA fragments. Another company, Human Genome Sciences, has patents pending on millions of DNA fragments. And it's basically what these corporations are doing is they're filing for patents on huge sections of human DNA, much as a gold prospector might lay claim to a piece of land in case it had gold on it. So these companies are filing for patents on human DNA just in case it has any use in the future. And these patents are being awarded by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. And the list goes on and on, but that's just a few of the companies. And what Monsanto has patents on is genes that are associated with plants.
All right. Thanks for your question, Tim. We're going to move on to Linda in North Hills on line three.
Yes, hello. The U.S. patents was the idiot that said that these money grabbers can own all of this stuff?
Can you
hello,
Linda?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could
hello.
Could you just give us your question one more time?
Okay. So the fellow was saying that it's the U.S. patents that has said that these people can own things that are God given.
Yeah, that's right, Linda. That is, in fact, what he's saying.
Trademark office.
On what basis are they allowed to give away things that they don't own?
Well, that is the absolute core of why we're mobilizing around this. That and that is a whole process that's been going on globally for decades now of establishing the right of corporations to patent life forms. They can patent them basically by writing out the genetic code, even though you and I know that they certainly didn't create them, and take ownership of them. And that is what is so outrageous about, it's outrageous on every level, on a deep spiritual level, I think to many of us, it's completely outrageous that it's so arrogant that human beings should say we own this life form as if we created it, when obviously no human being did.
I just want to say that mentioning it once, every single phone line in the studio is lit up like a tree. We're going to take another call. Kay from Los Angeles. Kay from Los Angeles.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you well.
Yes, I don't know if I tuned in late, but what I understand is that there's companies patenting my genes. Is that correct? Or my DNA?
That's exactly correct, yes.
How do they get it?
Basically, what this came out of was a decision made by the U.S. Supreme Court, where the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that this guy could patent a genetically engineered bacteria as his own invention. And from that decision flows all the assumptions that DNA can be patented by private corporations. And the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office have offered those patents, and then what these corporations have done is they've gone to the World Trade Organization, to the governments that control the World Trade Organization, and have demanded that respect for corporate patents on life forms be globalized, so that every country that's a signatory to the World Trade Organization has to respect these corporate patents wherever they are in the world.
But how would they get my codes?
Well, what they're patenting is certain sequences of DNA that that could exist in your body, that could exist in my body, that could exist in someone else's body. So the sequence of DNA itself that's in the middle of the cells in our bodies, but that's what they get the patent on. So it's not was your name Kay? I can't remember what your name was, but it's not like they've got a patent on your particular. They've got a patent on it generically, the whole lot.
But just to be clear, to clarify that even further, Luke, the Human Genome Project, which pretty much isolated and tracked the sequencing of our DNA, that is what is being patented in a sort of general fashion, correct?
Well, the Human Genome Project was a publicly funded attempt to sequence the human genome, and there were private attempts to sequence the human genome as well, with one of them which actually won. But this DNA per se, all the genes in the human genome that belong to us all, that they are being patented by a whole range of corporations.
Incredible.
Okay, I want to provide some people with more information about the mobilization before the show ends, and I just want to remind people that the website for more information is reclaimthecommons.net, and as well as biodev.org. And perhaps Starhawk or Luke, you can make a few last comments to remind people, maybe some details or anything else that you want to throw in there.
Well, I just also say people can go to my website, which is starhawk.org, if they want to read some of the other things I've written, both about this issue and other issues and mobilizations. And, you know, one final thing I would say is another thing that we can actually do is to actually have a real relationship ourselves with nature, to actually take a little time and spend some time in the natural world, observing, being present, making it real to us, learning about it, educating ourselves, because most of us in this country have gotten very poor education about nature. And a lot of us love nature in the abstract, but often get so busy defending it that we don't have any time to spend in it. And
if everybody could, our listeners could go to starhawk.org, I think both Chris and I, and I'm sure Luke would agree, some profound writing on a variety of subjects very, very close to us all. We're listening to Indie on the Air, your host Chris Burnett and Stephen Starr. We've been listening to Luke and Starhawk.
And we're out of time today, so we're going to have to end the show. And I want to extend a big thank you to both Luke and Starhawk for being on the show today. And I want to encourage everybody to participate in the mobilizations in San Francisco from June 3rd to the 9th.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Just a word of thanks. Thanks to Alan Minsky and Maggie LaPeak, our incredible producers, board operators, for KPFK for having Indie on the Air on the show.
And we'll be back in 2 weeks with Indie Media on Air.
You've been listening to Indie Media On Air, heard Mondays from 3 to 4 in the afternoon on your community station, KPFK, 90.7 FM LA, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and at kpfk.org for the world. Coming up next, it's the 4 o'clock report, and it is Public Affairs with host Eric Mann and Tammy Liu, speaking with legendary historian Howard Zinn on the, once again, the 4 o'clock report. Stay tuned.
John Rumbiak, visiting West Papuan scholar and West Papua's leading human rights advocate, will speak on the